Michael Byers, thank you very much for taking my call.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
So, the story I'm working on is what I see this increased Chinese activities in the Arctic and in various ways. So it got me thinking about how are these things connected and what role does the Arctic play in the Belt and Road strategy that the Chinese have been pushing for the last at least 4 years, if not longer?
Well, the Chinese government and Chinese state-owned companies have vast amounts of capital, which they are investing around the world, in Latin America, in Africa, across Asia, in order to build infrastructure, facilitate trade, provide access to resources through foreign investment. So this is a global phenomena of China engaging economically with the world. And the Arctic dimension of this is relatively small. You have to look to Africa or Latin America to see the truly massive investments, the hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure and other forms of foreign investment. The Arctic is on the periphery of much of this. But I certainly expect that China's involvement in the Arctic will grow if it maintains these vast stores of capital available for investment. Some of that will be related to newly opened shipping routes as a result of climate change, the Northern Sea Route north of Russia, the Northwest Passage north of Canada, and some of it will involve investments in resource industries. So perhaps in oil and gas in the Russian Arctic or the Canadian Arctic, probably in mining as well, in those countries and others.
Now, of course, so far we have seen Chinese investment when it comes to, you know, the circumpolar countries in Russia, in Yamal, where, you know, for the gas, the newly announced, you know, accords in Arkhangelsk to build in this new port just north of Arkhangelsk, a deep sea port again. Have we, heard of any interest of Chinese companies of investing in the Canadian Arctic?
Well, there has been some investment. There is, for instance, a Chinese-owned mine in northern Quebec. And a few years ago, a ship, ice-strengthened cargo ship, carried a load of mineral ore from northern Quebec to China through the Northwest Passage. But there wasn't any reason for concern about that. The ownership of the mine was correct under the Investment Canada Act. There were no problems with that. The ice-strengthened ship was, in fact, a ship that is owned and operated by a Canadian company that was on contract to the Chinese company. And the voyage took place without incident. So there is some early investment in Canada's Arctic and some use of the Northwest Passage, and I expect that will grow. The more interesting question is whether the Chinese government or Chinese state-owned companies will wish to invest in infrastructure in Canada's Arctic, as they've done in other countries around the world. And there is certainly a need for ports in Canada's Arctic. There's a need for improved services, such as search and rescue. And one can imagine all kinds of public-private partnerships involving Chinese capital and Canadian governments, whether federal or provincial or territorial. So think of the Port of Churchill in northern Manitoba, which currently is closed because the U.S. company that owns it has decided it's not economically viable. It's possible that a big Chinese company might take a different view and wish to invest the necessary funds in Churchill to make it operational again and to develop Churchill as an artery for trade into the American Midwest from the Canadian Arctic.
Which would also require rebuilding the rail line and strengthening it.
Absolutely, and Chinese companies are building and rebuilding railways around the world as we speak. This would be entirely consistent with what China is doing elsewhere. And I actually think it's an opportunity, provided that it's done in partnership with Canadian governments, federal, provincial, and territorial. We welcome foreign investment from around the world, and foreign investment in this kind of infrastructure is not a national security concern. You know, I do worry about China and Chinese companies investing in high technologies that could compromise Canadian security if they fell into the wrong hands. But to develop infrastructure like this to promote access to natural resources, this is something that Canada welcomes and has welcomed for centuries.
Now, going back to your expertise as a lawyer specializing in international law, do you see a way of reconciling this kind of development, economic development projects, with the fact that both the status of the Northwest Passage and the Northeast Passage is internationally disputed?
Well, that's a very pertinent question, because as the ice melts, there will be an increase in shipping and therefore a greater potential for challenges to Canada's claim in the Northwest Passage and possibly Russia's claim in the Northeast Passage, or Northern Sea Route, as it's more often called today. But here's the thing. China doesn't have any interest in challenging Canada or Russia's claim, because commercial shipping, in order to be safe and efficient, requires the close cooperation of the coastal state. Chinese shipping companies need Canadian charts. They need Canadian weather and ice forecasting. They need Canadian search and rescue. And one day they will need access to Canadian ports, including what are called ports of refuge, a place where a ship that's having a mechanical problem can stop for repairs. They might need a transshipment port at the ends of the Northwest Passage, where containers can be moved between different ships to facilitate a prompt arrival at their destination. So China needs Canada if it's going to make the Northwest Passage work. And on top of that, China would be concerned about Canada losing its position in the Northwest Passage, because China has the exact same position with regards to the Hainan Strait between Hainan Island and mainland China. Both Canada and China claim that their respective straits or passages are internal waters, and both countries face the same legal opponent, namely the United States. So China has a practical reason for wanting to work with Canada, and it also has a legal reason to want to work with Canada, because it doesn't want to have the negative precedent that would result if Canada were to lose its claim to the Northwest Passage. That would hurt China with regards to Hainan Strait. That would be a detriment to China legally.
To your knowledge, did Xu Long and request a permission to traverse the Northwest Passage?
Well, what happened in this instance was that earlier in the summer, a U.S. Coast Guard ship, the Maple, ironically a Canadian name on a U.S. Coast Guard ship, but the Maple, which is based in Juneau, Alaska, had to sail to Baltimore, Maryland for a midlife refit, and the U.S. Coast Guard decided to send it through the Northwest Passage. And under a long-term agreement with Canada, they requested permission to conduct scientific research along the way, which is something that U.S. Coast Guard ships do all the time. And this enabled the U.S. To ask for permission without conceding the U.S. position, without giving up the U.S. position that the Northwest Passage is a so-called international strait. And Canada promptly gave permission, as a result, everything went very smoothly, and the actual legal dispute was not engaged. A few weeks later, when the Chinese decided to send through their icebreaker, Canadian diplomats said, this is what we do with the Americans. Would you consider doing the same? And China responded, of course. And so they proceeded to ask for permission to conduct scientific research. Canada promptly gave permission, and the Chinese icebreaker sailed through without engaging the legal dispute that persists between Canada and the United States. It was brilliant diplomacy on the part of Canadian diplomats, and it also served China's interests, because China, again, doesn't want to take a position on the legal dispute. It just wants to have a safe and efficient shipping route. And so the dispute over the Northwest Passage really isn't an issue between these big countries and Canada. The dispute over the Northwest Passage is only a problem with respect to smaller rogue countries or potentially rogue shipping companies that don't have these broader interests and don't see the value in a cooperative shipping regime.
Just if you go back to the viability of the Northwest Passage as an alternative shipping route, I spoke with Professor Lasserre from the University of Laval in Quebec, and he pointed out that China is trying to kind of almost, you can put it in financial terms, diversify a portfolio of trading routes to, minimize the risk by its over-dependence on traffic through the Strait of Malacca. How viable is the Northwest Passage and the Northern Sea Route as a shipping lane?
Well, at the moment, in late summer and early fall, it is viable for cruise ships and bulk cargo vessels. These are ships that can afford to be delayed for a few days or even a couple of weeks in the event of ice moving into the passage and impeding their voyage for a while. And that problem of unpredictability is what is keeping the container ships away. Containers require just-in-time delivery. They require a certainty of voyage. So until we see more melting of the ice and more predictability, it won't become a major international shipping route. That could indeed be some decades away. But already right now, we have bulk carriers going through, we have cruise ships going through, and we have what you might call voyages of opportunity. So, for instance, a deep ocean cable laying vessel, a cable that lays fiber optic, a ship that lays fiber optic cables across oceans a few years ago had to move from near Hong Kong to near Greenland and sail through the Northwest Passage. A Finnish icebreaker earlier this summer needed to move from the Pacific to the Atlantic, sailed through the Northwest Passage, simply repositioning itself in order to take up a new contract. And this kind of voyage of opportunity now is a fairly frequent thing. We're only talking about several dozen vessels each summer, but it's become a possible thing. It's something that companies actually now decide to do, whereas 10, 20 years ago, it involved risk and too much uncertainty.
What do you see the potential of the Arctic in terms of creating a network, being a part of a wider network, commercial trade network, either one championed by China or other countries?
In terms of shipping, the entire globe is now a network, ships move all around the planet, containers move all around the planet, and this shipping route involves both the oceans and rail lines also, and highways in terms of containers shipped on trucks. So ships come into to Prince Rupert or Vancouver in British Columbia, and they're on to trains and off into the heart of North America. And the Northwest Passage and the Northern Sea Route simply provide more opportunities, more options for this global network, depending on where a particular cargo is coming from and where it needs to go. I don't imagine that the Northwest Passage will compete in a significant way with the Panama Canal in my lifetime, but I certainly expect that we will see dozens and dozens more ships each summer, and perhaps in the next decade or two, hundreds and hundreds more vessels. But those are tiny numbers compared to major shipping routes. So we need to keep this in perspective, but we also need to understand that it's coming, and we need to be prepared for it. And part of being prepared is actually working with countries like the United States, like China, to ensure that we actually have a safe route, one that can be relied upon, and one in which other countries are prepared to recognize the primacy of Canada's responsibility, that the coastal state needs to be in charge in order to provide maximum safety and certainty. Well, I think the most important question is, where is the Canadian government in terms of promoting investments in infrastructure in Canada's Arctic? Where is the proactive diplomacy with regards to convincing other countries to support Canada's internal waters claims in an explicit manner? Where is the improvement in terms of search and rescue, so that when a major accident occurs with a cruise ship or a jet plane that's flying between Asia or Europe and the United States, crash landing in the Canadian Arctic, how and when will the Canadian government prepare for these eventualities? Right now, as far as I can tell, the Canadian government is without intent or action on this file.
And in terms of engaging China and these exploratory talks on a free trade, some kind of a free trade agreement or a replacement for the TPP or as a supplement to it, what do you make of that?
Well, I'm actually concerned about a free trade agreement with China, because I'm concerned that Chinese companies will be treated very well in Canada, but Canadian companies will not be accorded reciprocal treatment in China. I'm worried about other dimensions of Chinese investment, particularly in sensitive military technologies, and there's been a record of a lack of concern by the current federal government in some key investments in that area. But in terms of building a port or a railway, investing in natural resource development, I have far less concern, and I would love to see the Canadian government actually engaging with major Chinese companies about the opportunities for partnerships to develop the Port of Churchill, develop a rail line, build a new port at Tuktoyaktuk, build a transshipment port at St. John's, Newfoundland to service the Northwest Passage. There are lots of opportunities that don't raise national security concerns, and where the obligations aren't with regards to the treatment of Canadian companies in China. These are things that would be happening in Canada, where we'd have oversight and control.